Hi, I'm Malcolm Hawker, and this is the CDO Matters podcast, the show where I dig deep into the strategic insights, best practices, and practical recommendations that modern data leaders need to help their organizations become truly data-driven. Tune in for thought-provoking discussions with data, IT, and business leaders to learn about the CDO matters that are top of mind for today's chief data officers. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever time it is, wherever you are in the world. I am Malcolm Hawker, the host of the CDO Matters podcast. Thank you for checking us out today. Maybe you are watching us on YouTube. Maybe you are downloading us through Spotify. In whatever way you're consuming the content, thank you for being a part of this growing and vibrant community of chief data officers and people who want to be chief data officers. Today, we are going to talk about a modern data platform. What does that actually mean? What do I need to be thinking about as a CDO if I'm making investments in technology and process and people, if I want to upgrade my systems, if I want to get ahead of the curve, if I want to be more maybe AI ready, what do I need to be thinking about? I can't think of a better person to be asking these questions to than our guest today, Emerson Gachalian, who is the CDAO of the Black Belt organization within Microsoft for the Americas. So Emerson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Malcolm. Pleased to be here.
Awesome. Emerson and I have some interesting shared background in that we are both from the amazing province of Alberta, Canada. Emerson is in Calgary, which is, frankly, folks, if you've never been there, is one of the most beautiful cities, I think, anywhere. Yes, Vancouver is pretty. Denver is pretty. But Calgary is awfully pretty. If you've never been had a chance to go to the Canadian Rockies, I would absolutely recommend it. Emerson's from Calgary. And I'm from 200 miles north, this place called Edmonton, which is not nearly as pretty. Let's be honest. I mean, it's not nearly as pretty as Calgary is, but there's a great little rivalry there between Edmonton and particularly our hockey teams. Edmonton got the best of it this year, but who knows, next year maybe the Flames will come back around. But Emerson, you've got a span for all of the Americas, right? Canada and the US, both, right?
That is correct. I'll cover LATAM, United States, and Canada.
Okay. Help our listeners better understand what you do as a CDO for the Black Belt team. What does that entail?
Absolutely. Thanks, Malcolm. So I work with a lot of our clients, CXOs in general, CDO more specifically, more often, and then, of course, CIOs. My role is to kind of like, how do I kind of help our clients to modernize, if you will, right? There's a lot of, you know, discussions around being ready for AI. There's discussions about how should I optimize my data operations, if you will. So I help the clients as to what modernization means, what a modern ecosystem or platform should look like, and what does it make for a successful path forward if you're thinking about modernizing, for example.
Great. So you're out there talking to CXOs all day, every day about what a modern platform looks like.
Absolutely. A lot of discussions, a lot of sharing of how we did it in Microsoft, how we did it with other clients. But most importantly, I think the one that is missing is how do you execute? Yeah. So I work with clients as to how do you kind of go from, you know, what we discuss, what we plan, what really think is the path forward, and how do we make it real for you?
Yeah. I had a chance to attend a day-long data governance workshop hosted by the Purview team from Microsoft, Karthik Ravindran, Alex Posar, Damon Buono, where what they shared through that governance workshop was Microsoft's governance journey, which I found amazing and empowering, because like listening to some of their challenges, biggest company in the world, right? But listening to some of their challenges was really empowering to me, because it's like, I've battled with that. I've wrestled with that. And hearing Karthik and his team just kind of go through what they went through from a Microsoft journey perspective, again, I thought was really, really useful. So What are some of the key takeaways from the Microsoft journey that you try to impart with your clients? What are some of the things that Microsoft has learned that you say, hey, we know this works, or we know this doesn't work? What are some of those things that you're sharing with your clients?
Perfect. And I would like to maybe reinforce what you just said about Karthik and the team. They are the ace team of our transformation, the data transformation with Microsoft. So if you think about it, they lived it, they solved our problem, and now they're in Microsoft purview, making it real for clients, right? So to answer your question, what it work for client for Microsoft is, number one, is coming from a very monolithic 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And by the way, all of these things that I learned are true, my collaboration with Karthik and the team as well, is coming from a very monolithic, you know, 10, 15 years ago, all the way to a hyper-federated solution, where it created so much more kind of like silos and what have you. The self-serve everything kind of created so much problem of duplication, what have you. So maybe the first learning I would share is, how do you create that balance of not being so monolithic and in control to becoming flexible at the edges in the business units, and yet you're disciplined at the core, meaning everyone is tied to a core of disciplines, of governance, of data management, and how you still enable this business units with the data and the tools that they need so that they can scale and build their own analytics. Because if you think about it, a lot of the business units, known to everyone, they're still using Excel and what have you, because they want to do analytics, right? But how do you modernize that? How do you kind of bring it closer to the core, and yet they're still able to do what they need to do, if you will, right? So maybe that's the gist of all that learning.
I love that story because, you know, when I was at Gartner, I saw a lot of kind of seesawing back and forth between centralization and complete decentralization. And what I really love so much about the Microsoft message was, okay, we kind of tried both, and where we landed was this more federated model where there is still individual autonomy within operating units. And Karthik, like, he logged into Purview. He showed us like that there's still some situations where, for example, a customer record is appearing multiple times, but at least there's visibility over it. At least there is control over it. So what I love about the Microsoft story is that it seems like it's very practical and very pragmatic, and didn't try to go too far to one side or too far to the other, but that it's this practical kind of middle ground. Do you agree?
I agree, absolutely. And if you think about it, you mentioned about centralization, and that was the discussion on building warehouses. And then you can take data from warehouses to build the data marts, right? That served its purpose for a lot of the reporting, but now we're building for modern analytics, if you will, right? For AI, for example. So if you need to train data for ML, for example, using a warehouse, does it really work? It's a discussion to be had, right? But if you think about open formats and open computes, what have you, then now you're opening up for more capabilities where analytics can go expand beyond warehousing, for example, right? When it comes to, you mentioned about duplication of that data. How do you solve duplication for that data is first knowing, is there duplication, how much duplication, tracking where this data come from, and then from there, start to the root, track it back to the root as to why this created so much duplicates. And so, Purview can serve that. That's why it's amazing, and how we can trace all of that, and then from there also go beyond that, quality and all that stuff, for example.
So you just mentioned kind of traceability, visibility, lineage. Is that let's assume I'm a CDO with a heavy dependence on kind of legacy. Maybe it's on-prem, maybe it's hybrid on-prem, off-prem, whatever. But I'm looking to make that jump to a more modern platform, to something that I can use to leverage for multiple workloads. This maybe starts to get into the fabric conversation. But I got a lot. Like, there's a lot out there. Where do I start? What's a good starting point? I assume this is something you probably hear from your clients. If yes, what are you telling them?
So there's multiple layers or multiple discussion points as to where you start. Should you start with culture? The answer is yes. Should you start with a modern technology or solution should look like? The answer is yes. Should I start with governance? Absolutely. So if you think about it, there's multiple layers as to where you should start. So to me, the one that worked for Microsoft and for other clients specifically, especially we have hundreds and hundreds of this engagement, is start with all of these layers, start where, you show value right away, and then rinse and repeat, basically. Kind of like, don't think about the overhaul of what you need to do. Start with something that you will show value in 3 to 6 months of culture, of technology, and governance, for example, of data management on top of it. So if you think about it, maybe culture is a totally different conversation. It's probably going to be hours, if not days, of conversation. Let's say, yes, there is a culture topic to be discussed. You should start there because that will tie to what you're implementing, right? That's tied to your strategy. But if you want to start with, say, a platform, how should I kind of modernize my whole ecosystem? The way I kind of see it, and maybe something that I can share here, is I built the modern analytics and AI and governance at scale. We also have a white paper that maybe we can share through a link here. But there are layers of that, right? Number one, the foundational problem is, of course, the governance. If you don't know where your data is, and in an example for a lot of my engagement, how much data assets do you have? When you ask a CTO or data leaders, and they said, great questions. I think we have about 2,000 data assets. But once you kind of get into the governance, you just realize you have hundreds of thousands of data that you don't know about, right? So number one is governance. Start with understanding how much data do you have. Is this data classified? Start building policies around it, and so that you can start securing it. And that's the key to kind of data democratization, right? So let's say you do all of that, and again, governance is probably, days and days of the conversation. Then get into how should I unify my data? Because building a new platform, building a new warehouse is just building a new silo, if you will. But if you think about unifying your data could be coming from CRM, could be coming from ERP, could be coming from your operational databases, or could be coming from your historian environments, right? So if you think about unifying that data, the first kind of like default is, how can I unify that data without having to duplicate or copy that data? And so that unification, if you see Fabric, that's the one layer where you can now create change data capture, meaning kind of get that data flowing into one layer without having to buy a third-party solution. Yes, your data gets copied over into one layer, but we take care of that cost, for example. But that data at least is in that layer now, right? There's shortcuts on it on Fabric as well, where if you have data lakes coming from Azure, from other clouds, you can absolutely create a shortcut without duplicating that data. So that's kind of like the underlying foundation of how should I think about my ecosystem, right? I don't see the copying into warehouses to be working in the future. Think about streaming, think about training data, think about Gen AI, for example. If you have to have all that data in a warehouse, would you be able to do that? Absolutely not. You have, unstructured data that you need to use AI for, PDF files, for example, right? So you have to find a way of storing it in open formats and what have you. And that's usually the lakehouse where we are supported using, of course, the one lake. Second layer to that is the data management. This data management is critical because this is automation, if you will. Automation and how should I ingest data. A lot of our, I'll give an example. One of our clients during COVID, the pandemic, they were saying, Emerson, we have 700 data engineers, and yet we're not able to catch up to the things that we need to do to clean data, integrate data, find that data. What should we do? And so the answer that I provided them is, what I see is you're trying to solve a process problem with a people solution, which it doesn't work. So, but if you think about automation, which is, again, a lot of the things that we did within Microsoft is a lot of that automation on how you ingest, creating a metadata-driven ingestion where there's 1,000 data that I need to pull, creating this without having to create 1,000 pipelines. This is kind of like pulling that data. That's a framework to be implemented. That's a solution for it. And then start like data quality. How do you duplicate data? How do you implement some of the quality, and how do you register this data that you kind of pulled together into the catalog? So that's the automation. And then the top layer, which is kind of like the consumption. Again, this is now, how should I build kind of like this domain so that I have a domain specific for this business unit? And so if you enable them with these domains and then have access to the underlying data that we just unified, that's become a game changer for everyone. Now you're scaling your analytics. The business knows a lot about their data. The business knows about the analytics and the insights they want to pull. If you empower them with this data and the tools, that's a game changer. And then, of course, all of this is tied together by governance, security, compliance, which Microsoft Fabric is enabling us. So I hope that's a very long explanation, but I hope that kind of provided some context.
I love it. Persistence, management, and maybe what you could say on the top is activation, publication, syndication, publishing data products, maybe. Something that I like there is, and this is something that that Karthik kind of touched on when he was describing this in his presentation in Boston a few weeks ago, was there's the data fabric for sure. It's a part of the management. Well, it's a part of all of it, actually. It's a part of all three layers. But there's a little bit of a happy marriage here between a fabric and some of the concepts of a mesh as well. I've always been a little bit concerned about the mesh because I think it was overly conceptual, didn't address cross-functional use cases. There was a few other things that I had concerns about. But I did like the idea of domain centricity, right? I did like the idea of having specific business rules and specific quality rules for that domain. And what you're talking about and the journey that and the lesson that Microsoft learned, what I think is that you can do that as long as you have some idea of oversight at a higher level. Would you agree with what I just said?
I agree. And to echo on the mesh, right? We looked at it. I respect all the discussions around it. But when it comes to the practical implementation, what I see working are the domain kind of like
right.
creation, right? And it's a concept like years and then decades ago about the domain-driven designs and all that stuff, right? So absolutely, yes. The federated governance, absolutely, yes. That's what we're advocating for, where governance is for everyone, for example, right? So there are, and Karthik, I'm not sure if he talked about this. So what we are advocating for is a hybrid mesh, if you will, where you have the mesh kind of like enable the business units, but the data management that we just discussed and all that stuff, that's the kind of like the data fabric in an academic discussion, not the Microsoft fabric, but the data fabric that creates the intelligence and the automations and all that stuff, right? So what I just want to get to in summary is, you have to kind of have the mesh concept with fabric and a hub kind of like approach to kind of make it real for our client.
That's the key difference, which is mesh is kind of has this real reluctance to take an approach to centralized infrastructure. In fact, you could argue that one of the core kind of premises of the mesh is that centralized architectures are inherently less useful, maybe is a way to say it. But I actually, I fundamentally disagree. And this is one of the things that I've always disagreed with. You know, network architectures, network topologies have hub and spoke models for a reason. The airlines have hub and spoke models for a reason, because there are economies of scale that can be realized through that. Now, the best of breed is what you just described, which is let's focus on data products. Let's focus on domain centricity. Let's even focus on a future where we start to automate governance. Those things are all great.
Absolutely. And the data product is the value realization, if you will. If you create a data product, an insight that generated, I don't know, 30 million worth of efficiencies, that's the value of that data product, right? And that data product can be used to build another data product for AI, for example, where how can I predict all of this and what have you? So that data product value becomes double or triple, what have you, as you kind of build upon it, if you will, right? So 100% data product, absolute need.
Well, it's interesting, something that you said, mesh purists would say that data warehouses are what Zamok would call an anti-pattern. She'd also say that MDM is an anti-pattern. She actually says that in data mesh. She says MDM is an anti-pattern. But you actually said that, hey, is this centralized data warehouse a useful architecture? And you suggested that more open source approaches to this. I assume you're talking Delta Parquet. It doesn't necessarily need to be Delta Parquet, but you suggested that duplication of data into warehouses may not be useful as a part of this modern data platform. Can you explain more?
I think when we're building designs and decisions, we have to be very inclusive. For example, big companies, they have data warehouses. Does that mean we should stop using that? You can migrate that, but if it's going to cost the company $30 million to migrate into a federated approach, is it reasonable? Is it practical? The answer is no, right? So that's why the hybrid approach is what we need, because we have to think about the previous investments, that if you change that just to make this new framework work, then this new framework is not really a value needed by the current company, because it's going to cost me, maybe I have a Hadoop environment, a warehousing, I have a mainframe still sitting in another room here. Does that mean I have to migrate all of that to make a framework work? And it's not practical, right? It's just not going to work. So we got to be very open on how we think about, yes, domain-driven and all that stuff, which is, again, not just a mesh concept. It was years and years ago. That's the concept where data marts were, for example.
Right.
You build a data mart for HR, a data mart for finance, and what have you. That's domain design, if you will, in old forms, if you will.
You're absolutely right. I was around in data mart days. I built many. It's something interesting that you said, and I fully agree with. You actually integrated the concept of, well, hey, what's it going to cost for me to migrate off an AS400 to support a mesh paradigm? What's it going to cost for me to do all of these things just to conform to this one architecture that may or may not actually be the most efficient way to manage data? Because you could argue peer-to-peer interactions have really never worked that well. Right. And I think that's a question a lot of data leaders need to be asking more, which is, okay, conceptually, I kind of like some of this stuff, but what's it actually going to cost? It's just not practical. I love your focus on the practicality. Here's a little kind of a advertising plug. I should have mentioned this probably earlier on, but I did mention a day-long workshop hosted by Microsoft that happened in Boston a few weeks ago. If you're in Europe, there's another one coming up the third week of September in Stockholm that is associated to Microsoft's FabCon. So if you're thinking about going to FabCon, if you're thinking about spending a day learning about, like, going beyond just this hour-long conversation with Emerson and I, and want to spend a full day deep diving on this stuff, I know that there's another one of these events happening in Stockholm. I want to say it's the 23rd. Don't quote me on that, September, but check it out. I'm pretty sure this episode will release before then. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it will. So, yeah, really exciting stuff. Awesome. Let's talk a little bit more about the fabric. I'm a huge believer. I was a believer in the fabric when I was at Gartner, when we were talking about this stuff 4 years ago. I was a believer then. Let's talk specifically about fabric and AI and how these things fit together, and maybe the automation piece as well. How do you see all of these things fitting together, particularly through the lens of AI enablement?
Absolutely. So if you think about data, for example, right? You need data coming from your PDF files. Yeah, let's say genomics data, PDFs, thousands of files, and you want to use AI on top of it, right? Yes, it could be in a data lake, for example, right? Now, what if you want to get this genomic data and merge it with some of the patient records or what have you, which could be in a warehouse or a lakehouse, what have you? Where would you then be able to kind of build this AI solution? That would be in a fabric where it could be a data mirrored from a data lake, for example. It could be in any other cloud. And some of that data could be in, for example, a data warehouse where you can mirror, for example. It could be in databases too. Some of this transactional data that is stored in databases, you can start mirroring it. So that's the value that first Fabric can bring. Now you can unify data, because AI is not, if you think about AI, it could be on specific data assets, but the value that we'll bring is how you can use AI on assets where it isn't beyond one platform, for example, or one storage, right? So yes, PDF files in data lake, data coming from databases or warehouses or what have you, unify it. That makes it easier for you to kind of get that data available for AI. Now, let's say that data is there, and then now you have a workspace in Fabric where you can basically, you know, you're doing data engineering, we have Spark implementations there. You can even call OpenAI from Spark within Fabric and start, you know, do a prompt and do a long chain, for example, to kind of sequence all of this. And then from there, basically get the value out of, you know, out of your data. Use some of the, you know, the models we have available in that we can offer within Fabric, and that becomes easier. Now, if you want to go, you know, implement some of this heavy customized AI solutions, you can use, for example, AI Studio and connect to this, you know, one lake within Fabric. Now it becomes available not just from within Fabric, but other applications outside Fabric. So it's open and it's available for for you the topic, that becomes it easier, for example, right? AI, you know, a part of that too is about being efficient, right? There's a copilot capabilities in Fabric. So a lot of, for example, the CIOs, they want to kind of start getting into AI. The first step for them is, how should I take advantage of these copilots, for example? So there's different ways in how we can actually, you know, use Fabric for all that. Use the copilot to start, get some of the data from within Fabric, Spark implementation, call some of the AI models, that's second. And third is from outside, you know, any other solutions you have outside Fabric, and then basically use the data that you have within Fabric. You know, that could be a third horizon.
I love it. Now, if I was to put on my Gartner hat, I'm sure that there are probably people listening out there who are saying, okay, well, but I'm not a Microsoft client. Maybe I'm not a Microsoft client yet. Can I do this on my own? My answer to that would be, yeah, you could. If you probably could. If you're a Fortune 100 company and you've got a lot of money, and if you're a data and analytics leader that is managing, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of budget, could you hand roll your own Fabric-like infrastructure? I think maybe you could, but I don't know why you'd want to. I mean, there's an awful lot of work there. Is this a build or buy? What do you think, Emerson?
So a very interesting question, because I'm working with so much clients, seeing clients who are, you know, S100, you know, top 100 clients, or clients who are not even in Azure right now. So it comes from, yes, this is the high rollers of the game where, you know, I have money to kind of roll it out. Absolutely. They're using Power BI, by the way. And a lot of these clients are basically easier for you to kind of, I'm a business user. I'm using Power BI. I just want to get some of my data, you know, I'm using Excel still. How should I get into it, for example, right? Or I have data warehouses that are in closed format proprietary storages. I need to kind of get it open. So start migrating some of their data warehouses into Fabric. That's what other clients are doing, right? So that's kind of like, you know, to your point, you have millions of dollars to use for this rollout of Fabric. But we have clients who are even not in Azure, like I mentioned earlier, that is getting into Azure because of Microsoft Fabric. The reason for that is it's easier for use to them. It's, you know, simple. It is basically open, and it's also governed. So a lot of these clients are also taking advantage of Fabric, and we have a ton of those, which is very, very exciting for us as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, can you hand roll a data quality solution? Yeah. Can you build an MDM kind of from scratch? Can you follow it, like the discipline of MDM, it builds something from scratch? Yeah, you could, but it's to the point now, I don't know why you would. And I see something very, very similar happening with the Fabric. 4 years ago, there was a handful of companies that I was talking to, a Gartner, that were building Fabric-like infrastructures. But but we're to the point now, I honestly don't know why you would. Particularly, you mentioned shortcuts, right? If you've got data sitting in Redshift, if you've got data sitting in GCP, that the kind of that open approach that Microsoft is taking here, again, I don't know why you would want to invest in building your own hyper data virtualization layer when there's a leader in the space that is doing it. I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because you mentioned Gartner, I was in both Gartner in London and in Orlando, right? In both cases, I'll share one use case. There's CIO and an SVP who approached me after my talk about modernization, right? And so they said, and everyone's, this is the common feedback I got from them, is now I have to change my strategy and how should I modernize? And the reason for that is, again, going back to, they have basically multi-cloud, and it's not by choice, it's because they purchase a new company, there's a cloud, different cloud, what have you. So again, going back to the practicality, how should I unify my environment, right? And so moving from one cloud to the other is not a practical solution, but putting Fabric on top of these three different data lakes, if you will, Azure, AWS, and GCP, that's super practical, right? And it just makes it easier for them. So if you think about the practicality of using Fabric, it provides a lot of that. Unifying your data, making it simple to kind of enable, you know, the different business unit and personas. Yes, I'm a heavy coder. I can use the different capabilities in Spark and other, you know, warehousing and what have you. But if I'm a business user who just want to get some dashboards with data that I bring to OneLake. That will just basically me within hours. I do this without having to wait for a table to be created by someone. I can do it on my own now, right?
If you are a Microsoft client, or even if you're just looking around at, you know, at what the capabilities are here, what I would urge you to do is to find a way to have somebody to give you a demo about OpenAI Studio. The first time I ever saw OpenAI Studio, I watched a Microsoft architect create a copilot in literally minutes, right? So you're talking about value realization from AI, particularly Gen AI. I watched somebody in minutes create a copilot experience that was pretty darn good, right? Was it perfect? No, but it was pretty darn good. And what you'll see as a data leader is how powerful this stuff can be, the role that internal data will help play in grounding any of the queries that you're sending to an LLM, and maybe even the future role that I hope that structured data will play here. Because Emerson, today I see a little bit of a break between Gen AI-based solutions and structured data, right? A lot of the work we're doing, everything we do around governance is really related to structured data. And a lot of what these LLMs is consuming is, to your point, is PDFs, it's unstructured data, it's text. Do you see these worlds coming together?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'll give an example. Maybe let me qualify the question. Are you asking if I have a structured data and unstructured data and I can use this for Gen AI?
Right. Yeah.
Or is it more? Or is it one feeding the other or what have you? What's your...
Let's say I've got a structured database of all of my previous customer transactions. Yeah. And I want to use a chatbot to help explain the history of those interactions, right? To summarize all of those interactions. But today it's sitting, all those interactions are sitting in you know, rows and columns. How do I get at that stuff and make it meaningful with it within an LLM?
Okay. So if you have those information, those could be in logs, for example. Maybe not necessarily structured data, right?
Okay.
Right. So that's one. And let's talk about customer service, for example, right? One client that I work with, they're building this AI for customer service. And it's about, you know, if the client calls, what would be the potential topics that they will talk about, right? So they might purchase the product, which is, you know, some of them in billing and what have you. This might be something related to a network. Let's say this customer is a telecoms, right? There is some disruptions with some of the service, and then they will call about that. So if you think about it, that the telecoms business, if you will, there's network data that's coming from, you know, a streaming information, if you will. And then there's some data coming from, a database or what have you, where it says that this person came to our store and they purchase online, what have you. So all of that is structured, and some of this is streaming, somewhat structured, coming structure, and then put them together. And this client is calling because they purchased a phone from the store, and now there was a disruption in the area through some of this, you know, streaming information. Now I can merge that data, and then when this client calls, now I have the reason to say, hey, you know what, this client's probably calling about the disruption. They're new to the service, and now how can I make sure this client is still happy and give them kind of like the confidence that, you know, this is what's just a glitch or what have you. That could be a solution for AI, for example.
That's interesting. You mentioned log data, right? That's the stuff we just kind of pitch over to the side and don't really worry about too much, but This explains why you're so bullish on stream, right? And I assume time series data and a whole bunch of other data is because it's more easily consumed by Gen AI solutions. Am I correct?
Absolutely. And so if you think about innovation, right? If we keep on innovating on structured data, we can do that. There's so many potential use cases, what have you. But if you want to innovate on things that we're on tap, that would be the unstructured data, for example, and streaming data, right? Because now it becomes easier for us to kind of use Gen AI, like the genomics data that I just mentioned earlier. Right. You have thousands and thousands of information in these PDF files. Now you can use AI to kind of go deeper and kind of like getting more information out of these PDF files and then store them into a two-dimensional table, for example, right? So yes, structured, very important, not going to go away. You could innovate more into that. But if you want to innovate deeper as an organization, look at where you've never touched before. You know, maybe if it's not structured, unstructured streaming data, maybe 5, 10%, if you increase that by 30% and gain millions and millions of dollars worth of information, isn't that amazing?
To me, what you just said is the most valuable thing for CDOs, arguably maybe of this entire conversation, which is if you really want to innovate, if you want to be in the driver's seat when it comes to the adoption of Gen AI in your organization and driving transformational value, then you got to look where you haven't been looking in the past. And that's all of that unstructured data. It's the log files, it's the PDFs, it's your SharePoint server that maybe you've never even looked at in the past, and finding ways to bring that all into a common management layer, which brings us right back to the fabric or something that looks an awful lot like a fabric. I love it. In our last few minutes, where do you, like, to the degree that we are prognosticators and we can see the future, where do you see things going in the next 2 to 3 years? Like, what's exciting around the corner that maybe Microsoft is working on, maybe some of your bigger clients are working on? What's some of the cool stuff you see coming down the pipe?
I think I'll take it from a client perspective, because I know clients are preparing for AI, preparing for how should I be AI ready, if you will, right? If I'm not already doing some of the AI. I think from a client perspective, if this is probably more valuable to the audience, is think about foundational items that you should implement. For example, if to your point, if you wanted to use, if you want to do Gen AI, and Gen AI is not just on two-dimensional models, it could be in your emails, it could be in SharePoint, it could be everywhere, right? So think about foundational of the governance. That's why we have the Microsoft purview. Thinking about how you can enable, for example, your business users, because a lot of the clients that I see that they're becoming successful is the tight collaboration and partnership with IT and the business units. So that culture of collaboration and enabling the business units is allowing them to be successful. From a platform perspective, of course, start with the data, open formats. If you're building new things right now, or building new capabilities, make sure it's open. From a format, storage format perspective, from a compute perspective, and then from a data management, think about automating a lot of this processes. And then, of course, that the consumption that we discussed, right? When it comes to AI, look for, and this is not an option anymore, look for where you will get more value out of AI, for example. There's so many use cases out there, and we are innovating heavily on AI capabilities, on simpler integration, if you will, on how we can also govern all of this. And that's why Microsoft Purview is an important strategic move for us. All of that tied together is simplification. If you are going to think about modernizing, yes, you need Microsoft Purview. And then if you need about data unification, what have you, that's Microsoft Fabric. And when it comes to AI, we got the AI Studio with all the capabilities that you just mentioned about co-pilots, if you want to build your own and all that stuff. So simplify. There's three kind of like solutions we're putting forward.
I love it. That is a great place to tie off. Emerson, thank you so much for coming on today and for sharing your insights with the CDO Matters community. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you. I hope to do it again sometime soon.
Absolutely. And thanks for having me, Malcolm. And again, if you, as you mentioned in Fabricon, if you're looking for deeper dives on this, looking forward to have that discussion, just let us know.
Yeah, that's awesome. FabCon, September 23rd, Stockholm, Sweden. Check it out if you're over in Europe. It would be some time well spent. All right, to our community, thank you so much for tuning into another episode of CDO Matters. We will see you on the next episode sometime very soon. Thanks, all. Thanks, Emerson. Bye.
Thank you.